fighting for America.
There is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. You built a factory out there, good for you. You moved your goods on the roads the rest of us paid for.
Fighting for Idaho.
To make me stay for 21 days, to not be with my family, to put me through this emotional and physical stress is completely unacceptable.
Fighting for you.
Kevin, you know that the opinion of Congress is down around 10 or 12%.
Right.
If you only got 10% of the market with your radio station, they'd be looking for another disc jockey here.
Don't give them any ideas.
Okay,
sir.
Well, you've got more than 10. I think you're up to about 18 or 19.
Thanks.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, Kevin Miller with you here at 580 KIDO. Joined by editor-author Jonathan Last, The Seven Deadly Virtues, 18 conservative writers on why the virtuous life is funny as hell. Mr. Last, good morning.
Good morning.
So we're always trying to, I guess, get values and morals and make them mainstream in the moral relative world we live in today. How do we make that hip?
It's a hard sell, isn't it?
I was going to say.
You know, we were sitting, like, thinking about this book with all my co-confederates in this, we're like, so who's going to take chastity? You know, who's going to go and stand up for temperance?
Right.
And those, it is a hard sell. It's all a hard sell. The moral life and the virtuous life, it isn't a pile of puppies. But on the other hand, you know, it is sort of important. And the book is, I think, a... You know, did you ever read Bill Bennett's great book, The Book of Virtues,
yes,
back in the early 90s?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I mean, it left a deep mark on me when I read it as a kid. But on the other hand, like, it's really tough love. Like, if you go back and reread it now, it's, you know, like Father Bennett is standing there with, you know, the baseball bat saying, you're going to be virtuous or else.
Yes.
And we just felt like that doesn't really work anymore. You know, the culture's too far gone. If you're going to really engage people, you got to be a little bit funny. You got to meet them where they are, and so that's what we tried to do with this.
Well, how did you? Let's start a little. You've got P.J. O'Rourke, Christopher Buckley, Jonah Goldberg, and Andrew Ferguson, just a few on the cover here. I think they're great writers, and certainly their works speak for themselves. But I don't know if they would be doing the stand up, if you will.
Yeah, well, they're really funny. I mean, that's the thing with all these guys. I basically, you know, I went through and I picked what I. The guys whose work I think is the funniest and who I sort of go to first just in my own pleasure reading, and that's how I assembled the roster. So I thought, you know, if I were going to be like the reader of a book, who would I really want to read on this stuff? And so I went through and I got them, and a lot of other really great people too, James Lilix, Christopher Caldwell, and Rob Long. I don't know if you know him. He was the executive producer of Cheers, a great Hollywood writer, great funny man. Larry Miller, stand-up comic. And anyway, they all said yes, and like I said, it turns out okay, because the idea is, you know, we want to poke fun at the virtues, sort of, you know, admit where it's a tough sell, and also the other point that almost everybody wound up getting to, sort of independently, we didn't talk about this before, and is that you got to be careful with virtues, because if you fixate on any one virtue to the exclusion of others, you know, the pursuit of extremism in virtue can easily become vice. You know, if all you're interested in is curiosity or justice, or even prudence, then you could take that far too far. You know, perseverance can become foolhardiness if you're not being a little bit prudent. And so I think everybody was really in tune with that. And one of the things that really comes through, one of the themes of the book is when you're going to think about virtue, you got to cultivate all the virtues together as a group. You can't just, you know, go after one. Otherwise, you can wind up in a bad place too.
Well, just going back to a chapter on faith here, chapter 8 with Larry Miller. I mean, he's known as a great comedian in movies and stand-up. I never thought that he would be talking about faith.
Yeah, you know, what's funny. So I met Larry years and years ago when he started writing for my magazine, The Weekly Standard. And it was the stranger thing. He just called the office one day, called the main number, and, you know, the kid who was our receptionist then said, hey, Chad, there's this guy, Larry Miller. He says he's an actor. He wants to talk to somebody about writing for the magazine. Are you kidding? I knew who he was. I'd seen Pretty Woman and 10 Things I Hate About You and the Seinfeld episode with the doorman. And anyway, so we talked, and he's a really smart guy. He went to Williams College as an undergrad. He's very, very bright, very interesting guy. And, you know, so we started talking, and he started writing for us. And I was surprised at what a great writer he was. And he said, we have to understand, stand-up is all writing. You know, like a great stand-up routine is a great piece of writing. You know, and people who do this for a living, they spend a lot of time writing and rewriting and honing this stuff till the material is really perfect and lean. And it's only a slightly different medium from doing long-form writing like what I do in a magazine. And so his skills were totally transferable, and he's a wonderful writer.
What's the message of inspiration or of humor or of both?
Both, I think. I mean, you know, on the one hand, it's a fun read. It's the type of read that you could give to anybody for Christmas. You know, I mean, I would say you can give it to your liberal Democratic uncle. You can give it to your, you know, very conservative daughter or friend. There's really very little politics about it. It's an entertaining book. It's fun to sit down with. But what it also does is it sort of, you know, the book sort of, the effect of it, I think, basically, is to have, you know, sitting with a buddy, you know, having a good time, but at the end of the conversation, you realize, like, you've actually gone to a somewhat serious place. There's some philosophical seriousness in it, but it's all in stealth mode. And so you finish the book and you realize, hey, wait a minute, I've just been catechized in a way, and, you know, I've talked a little bit about Aristotle along the way, a little bit about Plato, a little bit about, you know, Alistair MacIntyre and some of these, you know, big important things. And I didn't even realize that I was eating spinach along the way.
Is that lost here, though, in the, you know, world of witchcraft, world we live in today, sir?
You know, I think a lot of that has been lost. Yeah, I mean, in my introduction, I talk a little bit about, you know, Alistair MacIntyre and how, you know, I mean, the original ideas about virtue all come to us from Plato. I mean, this is long ago stuff. It actually is not religious at all. It's very philosophical. The original philosophical virtues were prudence, justice, courage, and temperance. And, you know, the whole idea was that, you know, you pursue these virtues that allow you to achieve eudaimonia in the pursuit of your telos. And, you know, all of a sudden you're like, you know, talking in classical Greek, and you feel like you're in like those little blue, you know, little green lobe classic library books that only like super serious PhDs have. And so I think a little bit of that has been lost. The book, I think, is a thin end of the wedge to get into some of that, though. But as I said, it does it in such a way that you never feel like you're eating your spinach.
That, well, you know, Popeye's still around, though.
Yeah. The key is we want to take the spinach and then deep fry it and then coat it with cotton candy.
Now, it's got to be tough for you because these are all your boys and friends, and you got some ladies in here as well. But what's the one virtue that stands out for you, maybe personally, or one that's sold the best?
You know, my favorite, you're never supposed to say, gosh, it's only you and me, right? Nobody's listening.
Well, probably Michael Graham is, but, you know, he's always listening.
I would say the one essay that really hit me the hardest and in the best way is James Lilex. James is a columnist for National Review and a columnist for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and he writes about simplicity. And so, you know, in the course of editing this book, I've probably read his essay now 35 times, and I both laugh out loud during it, and I actually tear up a little bit at a certain point every single time. It's just the most lovely piece of essay writing I think I've read in the last 5 or 6 years. But one of the things I've been gratified by is that, you know, when I talk to people who've read the book, most people have different favorites. You know, some people really love Larry Miller's, some people really love PJ's. And so I think no matter what you're into, no matter where your tastes are in these things, you're going to find something that really hits you in that sweet spot, makes you fall in love.
The Seven Deadly Virtues, again, Jonathan Last with us. Can we ask you a little bit about your day job?
Sure.
How do you see this playing out, these big midterms coming down?
Boy, we're down the wire. I'm very bullish, actually, on Republican prospects here. I think, you know, so if you go to Las Vegas and you go to the sports book, they have what's called the over-under on a lot of games, right? And so that's the number of points they're going to be scored in a game. And the idea behind setting the over-under line is you want to get half the money betting the over, half the money betting the under. If I were setting the over-under for this election, I would say probably 54 seats for the Republicans when all is said and done is the line. And I might take the over on that. But I think 54 is probably the most probable outcome. You could see 53. 52 is possible, I guess, although I'd be a little bit surprised. I would say, put it this way. I would say that 52 seats for Republicans and 56 seats are probably about equally as likely, but with the caveat that we may not know all the answers by the end of the night on Tuesday, because we're going to have two races, I suspect, which are going to wind up in runoffs in Louisiana and Georgia. But in both of those runoffs, I suspect the Republican will win handily.
You know, Jonathan, besides the Weekly Standard and talk radio in some places, it's kind of frustrating because I'm watching TV last night, and they go, well, let's just say the Dems win New Hampshire, and Georgia's a toss-up, and let's just say this, and let's just say that. They've got to, and I'm going, well, where's the other side here?
You know, I do sort of, I'm a little bit amazed myself looking at this. I am not a Pollyanna guy in all this. I was, all through the 2012 election, I sat there thinking, boy, Obama's going to win this by 4 points. You know, I did not fall for the Mitt Romney hype in that. I think the clear-eyed view of this election has always been, or should always have been, Republicans are poised to do very well. And, I mean, Obama is such an albatross around the neck of Democratic incumbents. And he hasn't made things easier for them, right? I mean, there's always something new happening. There's always another, I hate to say scandal, because scandal's not the right word, but there's always something else blowing up. You know, it's the badly handled Ebola stuff. It's him coming out and saying that, you know, well, all of my policies are on the ballot, and these are, you know, these red state Democrats may say that they don't support me, but they all vote with me anyway. So if you're Kay Hagan,
right,
you know, or Mary Landrieu, you have to say, what are you doing? and it really is just about a perfect storm, I think. And I would be very surprised if Republicans don't do extremely well.
One great thing about your publication, the Weekly Standard, is that you guys tell it like it is. You hold Republicans, conservatives, Tea Party folks, the liberals accountable. What about the growing, and we see this here in Idaho as well, the growing division between the grassroots, the conservatives, and the more establishment folks in the Republican Party?
You know what? This is actually a little bit of a hobby horse of mine. Where I think the real divide is actually between the money in the Republican Party and the actual voters. You know, we talk about the establishment. The establishment doesn't even really exist all that much anymore, so much as it is a function of where the money is. And I think the Republican money is in a very different place than the Republican actual voters are these days. And that's a problem, I think, actually. You saw that play out in the 2012 primary process. I think you could very easily see that happen again in 2016. I think we've long assumed that the 2016 primaries was going to be this, like, cavalcade of Republican stars with a very, very, you know, heavy, serious field. You know, people seem to think of 2012 as a clown show. And there was the idea that actually, you know, we'll have the 1927 Yankees all running for the Republican nomination in 2016. That may wind up happening still, but on the other hand, you can easily see a way to another clown show, where you wind up with, like, Rand Paul facing off with Jeb Bush as, like, the last two men standing, which I think would not make a lot of Republicans happy. A lot of Republicans would like to see a much more serious field of people like Scott Walker and Mitch Daniels and Marco Rubio, and Bobby Jindal, and I just don't know that we're going to get there.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. But then again, it's the money and it's how it's positioned. And the whole idea, and final question, Jonathan, the whole idea of electable, that's what happened with McCain. That's what happened with Governor Romney. But it never seems to work out. Wouldn't the Republican Party be better off to, you know, do a Goldwater? At least you have someone with the core beliefs as opposed to, hey, the lesser of evils, and find out if it resonates or if it is a disaster, because you're going to lose anyway.
I'd be interested in trying that myself. I mean, to defend the honor of the Republican Party in this, the Republican Party tried like heck to not nominate Mitt Romney last time around. You know, I mean, it was one of these things where the Republicans really, they tried very hard not to nominate him. It is amazing, in fact, that the race went as deep as it did. And if you really go back and look at the numbers, you know, so Romney wins the Michigan primary by 5 points. If he loses that primary, I actually think Santorum is the nominee. You know, I think the whole edifice was going to crumble out from underneath Romney. But this just highlights the importance of money. And the Republican money is just in a very different place than the Republican Party itself is. And that's going to be a source of continuing tension and a real source of problems for the Republican, just electoral prospects going forward, I think. At some point, they have to reconcile that split in the way that the Democrats have. I mean, the Democratic money is really where the Democratic base is, and that's very helpful to that party. And it's crippling for the Republicans to have that dissonance.
Boy, you talk about a Goldwater moment. Santorum is the nominee. That would have been some good
stuff.
It would
have been interesting,
yeah,
right?
As I
said, look, you know, Santorum could wind up with 42% or he could wind up with 52%.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows. Mm. But everybody knew that Mitt Romney's ceiling is 48%. The reason you know that is because he's run for office a bunch of times, and everywhere he runs, no matter who he's running against, he gets 48%. So He has an electoral ceiling, no matter what the office is and who the opposition.
Jonathan, we appreciate it. We urge everybody to go get your book, The Seven Deadly Virtues, and thank you very much, sir.
Great being with you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day.
You too.
There we have it. Jonathan Last from the Weekly Standard, The Seven Deadly Virtues. And, you know, only these talented conservative writers can, you know, make virtues not only compelling and want you to do it, but do it in a humorous way. Let's get you to traffic now at 580KI.
To make me stay for 21 days, to put me through this emotional and physical stress is completely unacceptable.
Well,
if these restrictions are not removed from the state of Maine by tomorrow morning, Thursday morning, I will go to court to attain my freedom.
Making sense of a senseless world. Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
There you hear it, the wonderful, compassionate young lady known as Casey Hickox, who says that she shouldn't be quarantined. She's going to sue. Oh, the gilded age of litigation that we live in. You don't like something, sue me, sue you. Is this really what it's come down to? Her feelings have been hurt. Her feelings have been hurt. She's been denied the rights to go to McDonald's, to go bowling, and possibly infect everyone else. Now, I'm sorry. I thought people that went and treated the folks that are sick actually cared about the people here. I guess she knows more than the folks at the WTO, the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization, the Centers for Disease Control, and everybody else. And if you really cared about folks, wouldn't you rather be safe than sorry?
I remain really concerned by these mandatory quarantine policies from aid workers. I think we're just only adding to stigmatization that, again, is not based on science or evidence.
We are stigmatizing these aid workers. They're victims. Talk to those two nurses that had Ebola, but thankfully are healthy. Allegedly. Here's the skinny. Would you want someone that went to West Africa hanging out with you at dinner? How comfortable are you that these folks are disease-free? Are you willing to take the president's word? It's so bad because those of us that are concerned about it were called hysteria, fear-mongering. Really? I just can't believe that now all of a sudden, well, you know, let's face it. You don't like how something goes. You don't like what marriage is. You want to bring back polygamy. What do? You take people to court. You don't want to protect people from a disease that you may have, that you went to a place that was known to have it, that you treated these folks. Sue.
And if these restrictions are not removed from the state of Maine by tomorrow morning, Thursday morning, I will go to court to attain my freedom.
Well, and isn't it funny that if you get a DUI, if you have a divorce, if you have the civil litigation, it takes forever, but these goofy cases are fast-tracked. Heaven forbid if you get caught doing a crime, if you commit a crime, you might have to wait a year or two before you go into the pokey or before you have a court case, never mind the legal expense. So I guess I'm sure the lawyer is giving her a discount or doing it for the good of the people. What public interest is served by having this woman run around in Maine? What public interest is it to take the state to court? That all they want to do is protect themselves. Hey, catch up on The Good Wife. Catch up on whatever else. Enjoy your life of just sitting there. Because my goodness gracious, what happens if an innocent person gets this disease through this woman's selfishness? That's what I think. 580-5436. She's selfish. She's a selfish individual. And maybe you're saying, oh, Kevin, you're overreacting. You should be more like those ha-has on Good Morning America with their corny, zany Halloween ball. But I have to say, you don't have to be Jerry Seinfeld and be a germaphobe when you're at church or you're at work and somebody sneezes. Nobody wants to get the flu. Nobody wants to get a sore throat. Nobody wants to be sick. Man, I don't want your germs. Keep your germs away from me, man. But these are germs that can kill you. Let's hear from this patriotic young lady one more time.
I remain really concerned by these mandatory quarantine policies from aid workers. I think we're just only adding to stigmatization that, again, is not based on science or evidence. And if these restrictions are not removed from the state of Maine by tomorrow morning, Thursday morning, I will go to court to attain my freedom.
There we have it. Don't get mad. Don't get angry. Take them to court. What's, again, let's say she has this. What was it, her rights supersede the safety of everybody else? Let's talk about it next. Kevin Miller, 580-KIDO.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning here, 580-KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, I'm sitting here taking a look at the ads, or I listen to the ads, and everybody always says, I can't wait for this season to be over. And I know a lot of folks have been listening to the ads and the campaigns, and personally, I wish that we had this type of enthusiasm, this type of public awareness throughout the year. You know, I started this program this morning with Dave Burnett, and we were talking about how everybody is so into the college football Final Four. And maybe it's because the sports media hustles. Not saying that people in news media don't, but you know, covering sports is relatively easy. You interview an athlete. You may or may not have an opinion. And you just go on to the next event. I mean, talking about a constitutional crisis is a lot more, it's much more difficult than, let's say, hey, do you think such and such got ripped off? And one of our great talk show hosts always calls it the low information voters. I've always called it the lowest common denominator. And early on, I always tried to, you know, jazz up the issues to make them more hip and relevant. But I have to say that if you're not into it, and I know there's a sense of frustration, but you just can't give up. But if you don't engage, if you don't fight, then you see what happens. We've got a terrible Supreme Court. We've got the Obamacare mandates coming down that are going to impact us. I mean, elections do have consequences. We all just can't
go enjoy your beer and ride your ATV and watch sports. We'll run the country.
Right. We all just can't do that. And those folks that are running, God bless them. God bless them indeed. We go now to our friend Emily Wither joining us from Fox News Radio. Emily, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good to have you here. You know, I wanted to start with an article in the New York Times, and I don't know if you had a chance to read it, talking about the final days of James Foley. And really, it underscored the horrible treatment of folks that are captured by ISIS, that are non-combatants, that are taxi drivers, that are medical workers, that are journalists. It really brought home to me just how terrible these folks are.
Oh, yes, I have seen that article. It's being shared quite widely here in the region, particularly among not only the journalist community, but also among aid workers and people who are working here in the region, because as you can imagine, reading that article, it just makes you realize how horrible, as you said, this militant group is. And there was also a warning that went out a couple of days ago from the FBI that ISIS were looking for people like journalists, for aid workers in the region to kidnap, to bring them back to Syria. And that's a threat that we haven't heard before. That takes the threat of ISIS outside of the border. So what ISIS are essentially doing is looking for people on the Turkish border, on the Jordanian border, on the Lebanese border, wherever they have spies. They are hoping to kidnap people and bring them back to Syria and hold them as hostages. So that has sent a ripple of concern among people who are working very closely with the Syrian crisis, but also with the Iraq crisis too. The fighting there has also produced a large number of refugees, and aid workers are needed in this area to look after the displaced people, and journalists are obviously needed to tell the story. So that particular report, coupled with the horrible details that have emerged of what it's like to be held by ISIS, is making everything quite tough here at the moment.
Yeah, it's a must-read for people that are concerned about the ISIS threat. And you go back to Mr. Foley, who was just 20 or 35 miles away from being in Turkey, uploading his stories, and then taken, scars on his ankles. A story of desperation in the end for him.
Yes, definitely. And just to highlight again how close the threat of ISIS now is to countries bordering Syria. Just a week or so ago, a Syrian rebel commander was kidnapped. He belonged to a Syrian rebel group, a moderate group, and he was kidnapped in Turkey by criminal gangs who were looking to make money. And this is what's happening in the region at the moment. These criminal gangs captured this leader. They took him over to Syria to hand him over to the Islamic State, who are going to pay them a lot of money, obviously, for capturing this leader. And then he was going to be in the hands of ISIS and held as a hostage. As it happened, a firefight broke out and this leader was able to escape. But again, it's just another example of how dangerous it now is along the border, and that ISIS do have spies everywhere. They have sympathizers everywhere. And if they don't have that, they have criminal gangs who are looking to make fast cash. And essentially that's what they can do if they kidnap people and sell them onto ISIS. They can make thousands, if not millions.
Emily, thank you.
Thanks.
Emily Wither joining us here at 580KIDO. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I will post that story. I'll post a link to that story. We'll make it easier for you. And it'll be the headline. Look for it later on today, and I'll Facebook and tweet it out when it's on our website. The story that will change your life. And I really, you know, if you were with us earlier in the morning, or if you're going to listen to our podcast with our lovely champion of her husband's independence, Nagmeh Abedini, you'll hear me reference the torture. And I think, until we read about the actual techniques, the waterboarding, the beatings, the being chained to somebody, the cup, the Middle Eastern teacup of food that they were given, one teacup, not the American teacups, but the smaller ones, a day. The evil depravity in those horrible ISIS killers that knew all along what they were going to do to Mr. Foley. It is a story that has touched so many people in the worldwide community. When you read that, you think, why don't we just blow the whole place up? We are a loving, peaceful, God-fearing, compassionate people. But when you read the last days of Mr. Foley and you find out that the Spanish and the French, those folks got released because their countries paid the money, and Mr. Foley and the Brits were killed because our country didn't. You have to wonder. You know, we go back to the whole debate. Do we negotiate with terrorists? And our country says no. And there's no more of a believer in America and Captain America than me. I love this country. You love this country. But there is a sense of hypocrisy, this country, like a lot of us, a note of hypocrisy when we talk about We don't negotiate with terrorists. We negotiate with Hamas. We negotiate with Hezbollah. We are trading now with evil incarnate, the Iranians, that have, what, four or five Americans that sanction the killing of Christians? And we say that we don't negotiate with terrorists? It really changed my life, and I want you to listen to that piece. I want you to read that piece, and we'll talk about it throughout the week. It is just amazing to me that you have these folks that kept selling these people as if they were cattle. I'm a humanitarian, not so much that I want to become a vegetarian. I see the cows on the road, and I think, boy, I'd love to have them all in my backyard, except I couldn't clean them up. And, of course, that doesn't stop me from having a big steak. Again, a hypocrite. And then I look at people, and whether we like journalists, whether we don't, whether we, you know, are like some people in talk radio that have blamed those people for being there, they were driven by a passion, a need to tell a story, not to harm anyone, but to tell a story. And for that, they were killed in horrific ways that we hope and pray that will never happen to anyone that we know and love, or, for that matter, our worst enemies. Unfortunately, our administration has not told that story, because that would go against the narrative of ISIS being the JV. Folks, you know, whether you're a person of faith or not, and, oh, there you go again praying, you got to believe in God. You know, I'm looking at Foley, and Foley converted to Islam. And unlike the others, this is a guy that got his head chopped off. Unlike the others, I mean, this is somebody's kid. You know, he embraced Islam. He thought it might save him, and he really believed in it. It didn't. But who does that? The depravity of the soul. Again, a must read that I will share with you coming up. Entitled, This Article Will Change Your Life. 850-580-KIDO. Let's get you to work safely and on time.
Brian Wiley, weekdays at 6. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
855, Kevin Miller in the morning. Don't forget, Friday, Sheriff Arpaia and Governor Otter. Tea Party Bob joins us now at 580-KIDO.
Morning, Kevin.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing this morning? Sound like you're having a great show.
Well, hopefully. It's not every day you get to do a TV show with Tea Party Bob.
It was very interesting, wasn't it?
Yes.
You know, you really have to wonder why this nurse up in Maine wants to potentially expose other people and her family and her community to this Ebola virus. How is this any different than bringing home a terrorist for dinner with a bomb strapped to his chest? You know, you have to be a very selfish person not to care about the people around you or the people you love, that you would be willing to not protect them by simply staying by yourself for 21 days. Now, nowadays, it's all about me. What this nurse is doing is no different than someone with the flu going to work, church, or school and affecting all those around them without a second thought about passing along their illness. Now, why is it so many people in this country have forgotten how to care about their fellow man?
It's all about them.
Well, I think you have to look at the decline in religion and the loss of moral and ethical values that we've seen go on over the last 10 years or so. You know, what we need to do is get back to basics, back to family, and back to values that our forefathers held so dear. And until we do that, we're not going to have any way of changing this country or this world.
Well, we do take a look at that. Finally, Tea Party Bob, how do you see this coming down the day before the debate?
I'm going to be very interested to hear the debate and see whether they actually ask some questions that are pertinent instead of talking about education for 40 minutes like they did the last time. I'd like to see them ask some hard questions and get some good answers. Unfortunately, you know, what happens in these debates is not what the people want to hear. It's what the people running the debate want to hear.
I'd like to just have them ask each other questions.
That would be a great idea. That would get some things out in the open because, you know, maybe there'd be a little, irony when you hear some of the things that they say to each other. it's always good to get the opponents together and have them speak their own mind about the issues and ask people that they're running against, why are you against this or why are you for that? That's the best way to run a debate, rather than having these moderators, and I don't even know whether you should call them moderators because they're always biased one way or the other.
Tea Party Bob, the Gem State Patriot. Thank you, brother.
Have a good day.
Let's get you to traffic at 580K. And Kevin Miller with you here. Don't forget the podcast. Hey, I'm looking for some followers, some friends on Twitter. It's at Kevin Miller Show. That's at Kevin Miller Show on Twitter. You can always tweet us, the station, at 580KIDO. We'd love to have some more friends on Facebook or some likes. And, of course, I'm always looking for friends, Kevin Miller, on Facebook as well. Good day. God bless. Thanks for listening. Keep the faith. Serving Meridian.